Hello, and welcome to The Canadian Story, where we discuss what Canada is, what Canada could be, and what Canada should be.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another special episode of The Canadian Story, where I am joined by Vitor Marciano and Brian Jean. Vitor has been on the podcast before, always enjoy your perspective on things. Brian has not been on the podcast before, but very excited to have him on to talk about what is going on in Alberta. Like, what is happening right now? I feel like there's a lot of people who are confused. There's a lot of misinformation out there right now. I don't know if you've probably seen this ballot thing that's going around now saying that Deloitte is having them sent to the wrong postal code. Maybe you could talk about that to start with, because that's a major one.
Can I just say, David, I mean, we were talking before, and I've been in politics in Alberta since I was 14. My mom and dad got me involved, just like you.
Yeah.
And I've watched things go through the process. And, you know, I was with the first time Stephen Harper was elected as leader. I was there beside him as a member of parliament and spent 10 years there. And then more years here in Alberta. I've never seen anything or heard anything like this ever in the history of politics.
Well, we worked in Ottawa almost a full time together. You were there in 2006 and I got there in 2008. And this is unheard of. Stephen Harper didn't change his own leadership review in 2005 when we were in Montreal. Yeah.
And just worked really hard in getting a good result. We're in a weird world right now where there's no trust. And because there's no trust, everybody looks at every situation and tries to imagine something bad is going to happen.
That is a really good point.
And then when they imagine something bad is going to happen, again, they keep looking, and anything that strikes them as odd just balloons out of shape. So we were talking about the return envelope and the postal code. It's just, ladies and gentlemen, it's a business reply envelope postal code. It's normal when you get the reply envelopes, the ones you don't put a stamp on it, if it's going to be a big mailing, they put a custom postal code on it.
Just to sort.
That's it.
So just to clarify on this, the reason the postal code for this one is different than the Deloitte one is because there's so much mail coming in that Deloitte's like, we want our own postal code, so it's sorted when it gets to us.
But David, why do you think so many people that have been involved with Jason Kenney in politics for so long, including MLAs and his staff, believe that something is going to be done by his team that is nefarious or going to be cheating?
Well, because he has cheated. And we all know this, right? Because he literally, the way I describe it to people is if you're playing Monopoly with your children and you're losing, if you were to play with your kids, right? Mm-hmm. Jason Kenney doesn't have any kids, but you have kids and you've played Monopoly before. If you were losing, would you flip over the table and say, we're playing Risk now?
No, but I do usually lose my kids. So that's
but this is the big thing about Jason Kenney, folks, is he's never lost before. Mm-hmm. He doesn't know what it feels like to lose.
And he gets very frightened
of losing
when it looks like he's going to lose or when it looks like he's not going to get the result he wants. And then he's willing to go into the gray. I'm not going to go so far as to say that he personally cheats.
Right, okay.
I'm going to say that he personally gets into gray zones. And in politics, when the boss gets into the gray zone, there's always a jerk around who says, here, hold my beer. Let me show you how loyal I am.
I'm going to go even further. Yes, absolutely. And we've seen this. There's some interesting things happening in Alberta politics. There's a couple of questions that I want to ask you, Brian. You decided to come back, right? You're on the front lines. You don't need this job. You're doing great in life. You're happy. Things are going well, but you care about this province.
Absolutely. My life is going fantastic, yeah. David. But my party, the party that so many people believe is theirs in Alberta, like Albertans really had a dream, you know, imagine that we have a government that responds to them and their needs. That's what they thought was going to happen. And it's not happening. And so, you know, we've got,
it's kind of the opposite.
Yep.
Right. So you're sitting there, Jason Kenney wins, you go and you're like, I'm going to go live my awesome life. And it's a hard losing. Nobody likes losing. We all hate it.
It's not my first time.
Exactly.
Lost your first time.
Exactly. And I think that's an important point. And I want to iterate it. And I want both of your perspective on this, but I'll give mine first. Is I don't believe that you should be allowed to be a leader if you haven't experienced pain and suffering and loss. Because without those things, you haven't gone through the refining fire of learning from your mistakes.
But David, we need to be able to have anybody, this is a free country, and we need to have the opportunity to have anybody that wants to put their name forward
Oh, yes,
and
yes.
not be blocked and be able to do it.
You're
and
right.
Let the people decide with full information.
That's a good
about
point.
Their true character of who that person is. And that's the key.
Yeah, that is, you're right. I shouldn't say they shouldn't be allowed, but I say that people should seriously reflect on who they're electing.
Yes.
And if they haven't failed, I have the same policy in my dating life. If the person has not suffered, I don't think I can date them, right? Because I've suffered, and I know that we're not going to be able to relate.
And there's an absence of understanding. If you always win, you can develop a swelled head pretty quickly.
You might start thinking that you're a savior. You might have a messianic complex.
And you might decide that I know everything already. And the truth of the matter is that maybe you always won because being a conservative in the southeast part of Calgary was relatively easy to win. Yeah.
But folks, you know, what we have to identify here is that this is not about chasing Canada.
No.
This is about renewing the UCP. David, you said it yourself. I came back for one purpose, because I saw that either the NDP were going to renew our legislature and our province in 1 year from now, or that we were going to have to renew the UCP. And I heard every day people told me, Brian, it's your obligation. Go back there and fix this problem. Every day I heard it.
And I want to thank you on behalf of Albertans, on behalf of my family, for coming back. I was in a similar boat, different than you, in the sense that this is less about saving the UCP for me and more about standing up against the people who took our freedoms away. As everyone knows, that's why I founded Take Back Alberta, because I believe that our rights have been violated. And not only have they been violated, they've been taken from us and been replaced with privileges. And I'm not interested in living in a country or a province where it's all privileges. Now, I know not everyone agrees with me on that. And I know you guys are supportive of choice, but maybe a little bit more nuanced position than my radical one.
I agree with you. Freedom is absolutely essential. We have very few freedoms as individuals over the last thousands of years. And the truth is that today we've developed this country into something that is really fantastic, where we have freedom of individual. We have the right to our own property as a being. We have the right to our own property as a home. And we have the right to our own property being the gift of having a trade. And those things cannot be taken, or should not be taken away from us. It's very, very important. I mean, there's the ability to allow freedoms within a set of parameters that can make as many people as possible happy. And that's what you should do as a government.
Yeah, no, I'm a big believer, just make the government smaller in general.
I agree with that too.
Like as small as you can make it. But I wanted to ask you, as a lawyer, because you practiced law for many years, what was it like seeing the charter just get tossed out?
Oh, it was horrible, because usually the people that are in the tossing are the people that are the most vulnerable. And, you know, whether it's First Nations or new Canadians that are being taken advantage of and not receiving the rights that they are due, it's usually the most vulnerable, and that's the most disturbing.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting, because you've defended, you know, you've been a litigator, right? You've been in the courtrooms literally day in and day out fighting for people's rights.
Absolutely,
right?
Under the charter.
And now the charter doesn't seem to be worth the paper it's written on. And I know there's a lot of people who are saying, well, if the government won't respect the sovereignty over my own body, I don't respect the government anymore. We don't want to live in a lawless society. That's never a good thing. And so in these meetings that we have with Take Back Alberta, I always say, no, the problem is us, right? And it's so important what you said. This isn't about Jason Kenney, folks. Now, Jason Kenney needs to be removed because he has, well, I'm not sure what's happening. We'll have more of a discussion on that later. But the truth of the matter is, our politicians are a reflection of us.
They are.
Ask the voters.
Yeah.
And we are the least civically engaged nation that I'm aware of in the developed world. Less than 1% of Canadians hold political party memberships, and less than 15% of that 1% donate, volunteer, and sit on boards. Yeah. So what I ask people is, do you think it is hard to capture 15 people out of 1,000 in the country? It's not, right? It's not hard. And the reason we are where we are, the reason that this small fringe minority with unacceptable views has taken over our institutions, is because we weren't involved. You've been involved since you were 14. I think you've been involved almost. All three of us have been involved since we were young men, right? Why did you get involved? Why did you get involved? And what do you see? How do you see that being eroded right now? Because we aren't the problem in this particular sense. We've been involved since we were children. So maybe one of the big parts of educating people on civic engagement is talking about what inspired you to get involved in the first place.
What inspired me was Peter Lougheed coming to my parents' store in Fort McMurray back in 1970, 1971. We had the newspaper at that time, and I was just a young guy. And he was a very nice man. And, you know, my mom told me that guy makes a difference.
Yeah, he did make a difference for sure.
My story isn't quite as good because it's Bill Lessig rather than Peter Lougheed. But Bill Lessig was our local pharmacist, came to visit my parents at the house, sold them a membership so that he could win the Progressive Conservative Party of Canada nomination for Edmonton East back in 1983.
Did he win?
He did. We weren't Canadians yet. We were just in the process of becoming
Canadians. But you could become members because,
political parties allow immigrants to become members.
And on that point, why are people who are not citizens allowed to be political party members? Because anyone who lives in a jurisdiction should have a say on the people who are elected, but they're not allowed to vote in the general election because you have to be a citizen to vote.
And literally what happened is he came and sold my parents' memberships because he was going for the nomination. I remember going with my dad. Actually, he only sold my dad a membership now that I think about it.
It was different.
Sexist. I remember going with my dad to the Polish Hall and Bill Lessig won on the fifth or sixth ballot.
Oh, wow.
And shortly thereafter, he got elected. And it's actually pretty funny because my parents became Canadian citizens on September 4th, 1984, and went from the swearing-in ceremony to voting because that was election day.
1985. Wow.
And so literally, you know, like within an hour and a half of becoming Canadian citizens,
they voted. That's an incredible story.
They elect their pharmacist. And then my dad over time became quite disheartened with Bill because he wasn't a particularly good MP. And I started to get more and more involved. And you're totally right about this need to activate people. Canadians are actually probably not only less civically engaged than other countries, but we're also less civically informed.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Like we've got relatively complicated governments, you know, the three levels, the courts and everything. And political parties don't do a good job of teaching people about it. And the
intentionally,
media
intentionally.
And the media doesn't do a good job of teaching people about it. And our institutions don't. And then they love to laugh at normal everyday Canadians when they don't get something. Look at that fool who doesn't understand.
This is the Laurentian elite to its core.
It is. Oh, yeah. And it's sort of like none of these people say, shame on us. We somehow have failed to educate our farmers and plumbers and office workers about how the system works. No, it's like, look at those people who don't understand. And that's, yeah.
It's elitism. It's elitism.
And it's a bad elitism that over time destroys.
Well, they think that if they remain with strong walls and they make it a select group of people that can be part of the decision-making and part of the actual governing of the party, they think that they can stay in power forever. And they don't recognize that the way to win people is to bring them with you. Take them with you, point them in the direction that they want to go and be with them when you get there. That's what it's all about.
Absolutely, that's what it's about. So these were the moments that brought you in, but what was the driving force behind getting involved? Like, why did you want, for me, what really pushed me into it was the gun registry and how Alberta was being treated by Chrétien and Martin. And I like to say, I am the political descendant of Stephen Harper because the first membership I ever bought was in the Alliance Party to vote for him to become the leader of that. And then I ended up, as some of you will know, my story of getting to work for him and sitting beside him at that first ever 2005 convention. That was very cool. But you guys are different. You're political descendants of different people because you got engaged at a different time. You were activated by different people. So Lougheed for you, I suppose.
It was, but you know, I saw Lougheed, he was in our business and we were business people. So, you know, and had a newspaper. So we saw that and my mom wrote about it and said, this guy makes such a positive difference in people's lives. And we saw the change to Lougheed. So I was part of that. I remember the night my parents talking about the change to Lougheed. And then I didn't get involved in politics except on the local level and, you know, getting involved that way. But in 2004, when I saw how the West
was. So you are a political descendant of Harper.
Yes, I was. And you know, I got very involved in 1991. I was doing my master's in law at the time, and I was focused on how to negotiate a settlement between the Quebec law and the rest of Canada. And a 30,000 word thesis, so I had to do a lot of research. And in the research, I was like, that's how we're treated? I was like, wow, like what's going on here? And then when I got to Ottawa, 2004, I got elected in opposition. I was like the biggest newbie ever, but I thought I could solve all the West's problems in the first 15 minutes.
Most new MPs, they really think that, eh?
but, you know, I was disgusted when I got there. And I'm talking about the West and Ottawa. And I'll talk, I shouldn't say Ottawa, I should say the Laurentian elite.
Yes.
That's the best way to put it. And over time, I got more disgusted. In 2006, I got the privilege of being a parliamentary secretary, which meant that I got to do a lot of legislation and oversee a lot of things that I got the privilege to do. Stephen Harper gave me $1 billion in green infrastructure fund to spend on green infrastructure, which I could not spend all of, for the people of Canada, obviously. But what I did do was I was part of the NCC, the National Capital Commission, and I saw how much money is spent in Ottawa. Like at that time, it was probably $250 million a year just because Ottawa was the capital. Now, I understand, but why do we have all the museums there? Why do we have all the public service, by the way, which is about 89% Quebecois, which means their first language is French? Why are they there? Like, do you expect some sort of positive reaction from the West? Do you believe that we should have people that are paid enormous salaries for doing, for polishing things that people in the West would receive a third of the salary for? It's just not fair. And no. Something needs to change, and it needs to change now. I do remember a story, if I can tell you, and sorry to bore you, but when I was a parliamentary secretary, I remember that I found out and I talked to one of the ministers and I said, listen, they are spraying down for a bug that hasn't existed in 30 years on a ferry that goes back and forth between two of our provinces. And I was told by the minister, who was a Westerner at the time, Brian, those are government jobs. Now, they may not be accomplishing anything, but it's a 24-hour-a-day government job at those, on both sides of the docking and landing of those ferries. We're not taking that away. For a bug that hasn't existed for 30 years, you know, like just...
The worst form of government tyranny is the kind that creates jobs for the sake of just...
Programs that never end.
Yeah. Well, the bureaucracy must expand to meet the expanding needs of the bureaucracy.
But, you know, we have that problem in Ottawa.
Yes.
But we're slowly starting to develop that problem here in Alberta.
Oh, I think we already have
it. I don't think it's slow. 40 no. years with the same government, no matter what it is, you're going to have, you know, the public service now, as good as they are, and they are fantastic. The truth is there's a lot of things going on there that even the public service people don't like. And it's got to end.
It has to end. I mean, ask political descendants of Harper. The number one thing he hated was corruption. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, he wouldn't like it here very much.
Oh, no.
It's a thing. And we've everybody thought the UCP would change that. I honestly thought, you know, what you get by bringing the two parties together is you get that wild rose, anti-corruption, clean government ethos, and we're going to bring it in, and it's going to matter. And, you know, Jason Kenney wasn't my guy, but I didn't think he was going to have a problem there. And I'm kind of surprised by how it's evolved. I'm surprised that, you know, a select group of lobbyists are now way more important than lobbyists have ever been in Alberta. I'm surprised that, you know, if you know which lobbyists to hire and you pay them enough, good things happen. I'm surprised that, you know, we continue to have like government universities need to hire lobbyists to speak to the government.
Or cities. The city of Calgary. Like, why do they need a lobbyist to talk to the province of Alberta? I mean, that's their government. They are actually a creature of the province. That there should be like, it's truly unbelievable. Remember the Accountability Act?
Yes.
Harper's first.
That was Harper's, yeah. And I do always say that he shouldn't have made it the 5-year cooling off period because it's ruined staffer life for sure. Like
and reduce the quality of the staffers.
And reduce the quality of the staffers, but that's a whole other story, you know. Live and learn. You make decisions and you can deal with the consequences, right? But what I will say, and I think this is so important, is what everyone here I think is listening for, and we need to talk about is what is going on. Like, so let's start with, okay, COVID hits, lockdowns are happening. Jason Kenney's popularity is going down. Where would you have gone differently, Brian, if you were in that spot? And why do you think what happened?
Well, I would have taken my truck and I would have done a tour of Alberta. The truck I've owned for, you know, a long time.
One you can put gas in, perhaps?
I won't go there right now, but, you know, I would get out there and talk to the people. And that's what I've been doing. And I will tell you, people are very unhappy. They're very unhappy indeed. They feel that, you know, remember the UCP is a representative of the people of Alberta. And right now, and for the last, I think, several years, they have not felt like that is their government. And they're kind of ashamed of their government. They're ashamed of, you know, the balcony dinner. They're ashamed of the two, you know, sided saying one rule for us, one rule for them.
And, Aloha Gate, right?
Yes. Yeah. And, yeah. And, you know, it's just people feel far enough away that they're not happy with the UCP. And remember, this is only 3 years from when they got elected. Like, it's accelerated very quickly. I think Albertans are now not going to accept PC corruption anymore.
Oh, I hope not. I hope you're right. Yeah, like, we need to get rid of this PC corruption. But I think the weirdest part of this whole thing, there's an old Bible verse that says, if you're hot or cold, I will love you. But if you're lukewarm, I'll spew you out of my mouth. Right. And Jason Kenney has been lukewarm on this. He's gone. He hasn't been able to pick a lane.
But it's because he kind of listened to the wrong people right at the very beginning. And then when he listened to the wrong people, he found himself in trouble. And then he's trying to swing the pendulum a little bit. And you end up back and forth in this weird mess. And a lot of it comes down to Jason's personality. He wanted to be popular. He wanted to be Dr. Epidemiology. Let me explain this to all of you.
He wants to be the professor.
He loves to explain this. And hey, I love explaining things too. So this is a personality.
You really do.
It's a personality trait.
Yeah.
But I'm sensitive that if I had his job, I shouldn't be doing that. And I remember one day when Jason Kenney is doing his presentation, I'm texting to one of his senior staffers saying, what's he doing? Because if he gets any of this wrong, he wears it. And if he gets any of this right, he's the one delivering the bad news. Well, like, this is silly. And they said, well, he's just got to explain. And then so one, you begin explaining. But then the other part that happens is, because you're explaining, you got to go get briefed by the fancy people who are going to tell you what you're going to explain to everybody else. And he starts listening to the fancy people.
Now, I've been told, and I don't know if I'm right, but I've been told that what's happening is he's governing by polling. And the only polls he's not listening to are the polls that identify he doesn't have a chance to win against the NDP. And that's obviously been for the last 15, 16 months now, every single month. But let's not talk about that poll, because that's a poll he doesn't pay attention to. But my understanding is he does polling on the big questions. And then when... And as you know, people's opinions change the more information they get, because when you educate people on the truth, they actually change their mind on the results often. And I think what happens is the polling is premature to his decision making, and the people haven't had the full time to think about it. And so when he makes that decision, you know, he does the polling, makes the decision, people start to learn about it, and then they say, no, I don't like that. And then he finds out they don't like the decision, so he does polling and he changes it back again. And I don't know if that's correct, but I have been told by some sources that's what's going on.
That's my analysis exactly. Okay. When I'm in the rooms, or when I was in the rooms as a spokesperson for TBA, which I'm not anymore, but when I was in those rooms, I always said, Jason Kenney tries to find out what people want and give it to them. That's not leadership.
No.
What leadership is saying, this is my goal. This is my plan to reach that goal. And if you want to reach that goal and like my plan to get there, follow me. And if not, don't.
And also anticipating where they want to go.
Yeah.
Marketing. It's like marketing, right? You need to know where people want to go. And the way to find out is to ask them and educate them, focus groups, you know, making sure you do polling, but combine them all together, because you have to be a fortune teller. And if you're wrong, well, you're not going to be the fortune teller anymore.
Right? But you know what I mean?
Let's not go that far.
it's more complicated and yet simpler than that. Because if you know where you want to take people, you can make sure that they get the information that gets them there.
But you can't take them somewhere they don't really want to go.
I agree. But you can think about how you're presenting the information to get them there. And what happened was Jason Kenney never actually thought about how information was presented.
True.
Because he wanted to be in front of the cameras, he was taking whatever was brought to him that day and whatever he decided to get in front of the cameras. Whereas he would have been much better served to turn to AHS and Dr. Hinshaw and said, congratulations, you're not doing 20-minute press conferences. You're doing 2.5 hours. And if that means that the last hour of the press conference is dominated by Western Standard and the Rebel, so be it.
And
if the media isn't going to ask enough questions, congratulations. Let me bring you in front of a legislative committee, because I know my backbenchers have 2 hours worth of questions for you.
For sure.
And if AHS and Dr. Hinshaw had great answers, well, that changes people's opinions. And if, as it turned out, I think, and I firmly believe this, even though I'm probably more nuanced on this issue than either of you, if, as it turned out, their answers were delivered with tremendous confidence, even though they had tremendous doubts, the public would have clued into that too. And I think it would have been very useful for Albertans to have clued in relatively early that the experts don't know very much and they're giving us their best guess, and they're being arrogant about their best guess. So they're being political. Because then I think at that point, once Albertans decided, okay, this is political, they would be able to put a different filter on the whole thing.
Yeah.
And that would have given Jason Kenney and the UCP government more space to work with. But they never did. Like, it was always framed as, this is science, this is truth. And I remember watching all of these things thinking, what you're saying right now is not going to be true in 3 or 4 weeks' time.
Can I add one thing? Sorry.
No, I just want to say, but remember, the one thing to remember here is, Jason Kenney, this is not just about COVID. Some people say, and I know he's trying to make it about COVID. He's trying to make it about COVID.
No,
it's not about COVID. Man, I saw, as soon as he got elected, series after, bad decision after bad decision after bad decision after bad. Like, he's made a number of bad decisions. And I mean, he is a great talker. And I've watched him for years. And in both official languages, I don't think, there's very few people in the whole country that could touch him as a talker. But as a decision maker, I really watch the decisions, and as they're being made, I'm like, don't do that. I see what you're doing. Don't do that. And he does it. And then 2 weeks later, he doesn't apologize. He just changes it. Or else
he never apologizes. Have you guys noticed? Like, almost never. Now, I'm not going to say never. There's been times where he said, we made mistakes, but he never says I made mistakes. He says we made mistakes. But I want to challenge one thing where you're like, well, if you give people the right information, you educate them. I think that's part of the problem, because actually, it is a style problem. Scott Moe versus Jason Kenney. They made the same decisions on COVID, sometimes on the same day.
Yeah.
And yet, Scott Moe is massively popular and just crushed his leadership review. And Jason Kenney had to move his leadership review in order to survive.
Because he was
twice he had to move his leadership review. So, my point that I often make to, like, when I was working with more oil and gas guys at the Modern Miracle Network, I would say, you don't understand. People don't think in facts. They think in feelings. And then they post-rationalize their feelings to explain them to themselves. And that is the natural human tendency. We are heart-driven beings, not mind-driven beings. Our minds are what we use to process our hearts, right? Jason Kenney does not understand that. He thinks people are mind-driven beings, or he believes that emotions are just a lower animal form of thought and shouldn't be taken into consideration. But that's why he's in the problem he is. It isn't even all of his decisions were bad, because Scott Moe made the same decisions.
It was how he made them.
It was how he made them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
There's that how question has haunted him.
Yes.
There have been so many issues where he's made what I think is the right decision, but he's delivered it in a way that left me, like Brian said, feeling uncomfortable, going, that's not going to work very well. And, if it's about persuasion, you can try to persuade someone to the same thing. And if you do it badly, you fail to persuade them.
More selling, less telling.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and sometimes don't even try to sell or tell, just do.
And
be quiet about it, and then come back 6 weeks later and say, what did you think of that? It worked out well, didn't it?
But I would say that's the mistake, because he should be imagining those decisions are affecting his best friend. And his best friend, how he wants his best friend to come on a trip or to make a certain decision. And what he needs to think about is on that, he can convince his best friend to go and do that either one way or the other way. And one way is a successful way. And the other way, he's just going to make that best friend very angry. And I think we all have best friends that we can imagine that. And that's the key. He's got to imagine that his best friend is the person on the other line, on the other end of that line, and that decision is going to affect them. And how he convinces them to go on that route is what it's all about, the how. And he's not done a very good job on that.
Well, I like your analogy about your wife. Why don't you share with that? Because it's exactly what you're saying, Brian, and it just will add to it.
Well, he's much better at that than I am.
Well, listen, I've got a very smart wife who oftentimes looks sideways at me and says, eh. And, if I'm trying to convince her of something, I'm sure there are arguments and styles of approach that will give me a good chance of succeeding. And there are also arguments and styles of approach that will absolutely guarantee I fail.
And it's the same outcome that you're looking for.
You're trying to do
the same thing, yeah.
And Jason Kenney only thinks about the thing, not about how he's going to get somebody there. And he's just not bringing people along. And part of this becomes, he's missing it because he misses it in terms of trying to bring along his own caucus or trying to bring along his own cabinet. It's sort of like, I have decided I will announce everybody else will think it's brilliant. No, that's not how
good that's not how works. Good leadership works.
What I don't understand, and this is my naivety, but what does he expect, you know, out of the two times he's delayed this leadership review, what does he expect to get out of it? Because people are not fooled. They know that he's done this delay on purpose. They know that he's, you know, had six Visa or American Express cards by, you know, somewhere almost 5,000 memberships from his team. He knows these things are happening. People will know this. What does he expect long-term will happen? He's, you know, I can only surmise that he's prepared to let the party blow up on the basis of, you know, this de facto, you know, people have described it as the PC Wild Rose merger. I look at it more as Albertans that want to get involved and don't want corruption anymore, but want good government. So I don't know. I don't know what his big plan is, because he's always had a big plan. But right now, I don't see a big plan working to help Alberta at all.
Well, it's about Jason Kenney now, not Alberta.
Okay.
And I was going to make the point that I think too often Jason Kenney doesn't have a big plan. I mean, other than the big plan being that Jason Kenney will be in charge, I actually think one of the biggest problems this government's had from the very beginning is it gets up in the morning and does stuff by the seat of its pants. It doesn't actually plan for things.
And funnily enough, if you watch Jason Kenney long enough, as I have, from the time I was in the Prime Minister's office to working for him, Jason Kenney does everything by the seat of his pants.
Yeah.
Does he?
Oh, yes. Yeah, oh, yeah. He is a pure gut-driven, like, he's just like, this is right, and then he figures it out. He's very, very similar to me, to be honest. That's how I operate.
And that's why you would be a bad premier.
Yeah, I'd be a terrible premier.
you get a guy like Ralph Klein, blue-collar journalist.
Yeah.
Becomes mayor, assembles good team, people around him. Becomes cabinet minister, assembles good people around him. Runs for premier as the most liberal candidate running for the PC leadership. Remember, everybody, we all still thought he was a former liberal mayor of Calgary. Kind of look at him sideways. But goes out there and wins this thing by convincing rural Alberta that Nancy Bukowski's too Edmonton. And then this former liberal mayor of Calgary
becomes the most conservative premier we've ever had.
And takes all of these good quality conservative rural MLAs and delegates authority to them, gives them power and plans. And he's got, you know, Rod Love with him, and they're planning. I mean, Rod Love had one amazing political trick. One trick. He's like, pick a day in the future, 6 months to a year out. Imagine something really good happening that day. Like, plan that perfect day. Now work backwards and build a plan so that that day you can have that go on. And he would do all sorts of government planning that way. And government plans, government policy announcements, government decisions under Ralph Klein would have 3, 4, 5 month cycle times. Like, we're setting up the dominoes now that we're going to push over. That means that we're going to have a good September. That's not happening under Jason Kenney. His cabinet ministers don't get to plan.
There is no plan. Think about it. He just bought Keystone Pipeline. Yeah, right? There's over and over again, he's reactive, right? He's reacting to the polls, like you said. And that's why I'm really firm on this. It's not leadership to just find out what people want. Because as you pointed out, most Canadians don't even know how politics works. So their opinion on how it should go isn't educated. And that's what Take Back Alberta is all about, is going around and teaching Albertans, and then eventually, hopefully, Canadians, maybe North Americans, how their system works so that they can get the outcomes they want, because right now they just don't even know. I mean, I was in rooms where there would be 300 people, and I would say, how many people know what a CA meeting is? And two hands would go up.
Wow. Yeah.
Now, CA, constituency association meeting, is literally the board of directors for your local riding for your MLA. That's a fairly significant thing to know, and a huge pressure point to have massive amounts of impact. And yet most people didn't even know it existed.
And something that's available to sort of every normal human being who wants to be. I mean, if I want to take you all the way back to when you asked your question about how people got involved, I mean, first got involved at 14, did some politics until about, you know, 93, sat out politics from 94 until 2000, showed up, started doing stuff, realized I was pretty good at it. Kept volunteering. By 2005, I was, you know, I was on the National Council of the Conservative Party of Canada as a volunteer.
Yeah.
And you can do that in Canadian politics. You can literally just show up, work, move up the totem pole. It's so wonderful relative to so many places in the world.
And you get elected too.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's beautiful about our democracy. Yeah,
it is. Well, look at Dane Lloyd. He's a friend of mine. We went to Trinity together, and now he is supporting Kenny right now. But He was a staffer in Ottawa for Ed Fast, the Minister of International Trade.
Friend of mine.
Yeah. And then he, Ed Fast is a great guy. And he, so he, you know, he does that. He's his driver. Then he goes and wins a nomination, and he's been elected twice now. Yeah. Right. And that can just happen for you.
It's there in Canada.
Yes.
So can I ask a question, David? Why are you voting no?
I am voting no for the following three reasons. The first and most important is I do not believe, in fact, I am absolutely certain that if Jason Kenney remains the leader of this party, that Rachel Notley will be the next premier of this province. So for the sake of this province, I am laying down my life in terms of the hours of my day, because my family lives here, my nieces and nephews, my brothers and sisters, and my parents live here. I can leave, but I can go anywhere in the world at this point. They can't.
Yeah.
And so I'm fighting for them. And then the second reason is I believe that leaders must be held accountable when they lie to people. Right?
There has to be so much power.
Oh, when they have so much power and they lie, he promised there would be no vaccine passport. Now, if he hadn't promised that, it would be different, but he promised it. And then a mere days later, implemented it. And he was so weasel wordy about it. He said, it's not a vaccine passport, it's a restriction exemption program. Like, how stupid does this man think we are? And then the third reason, and I think this is probably the most significant reason, but not the number one reason for me, is it turns out that Jason Kenney is not very good at being number one, right? He's very good.
Stephen Harper was always good at number one.
Yeah, Stephen Harper was a king of being number one. And I think that papered over a lot of Jason Kenney's leadership flaws, because he didn't have to be number one. He could be a micromanager of a small ministry team and see everything that was going on in his department. He is an incredible field marshal.
But remember, too, I just want to point this out, that during his last budgets as a minister, he overspent, I think, $1 billion over the last three budget years. So, yeah. You know, like, let's not go too far.
No, but he achieved the objectives that Stephen Harper gave him to achieve, right? And that's a field marshal.
Yes,
a field marshal's not concerned about the amount of money spending. He's just trying to achieve an objective. When you're a field marshal of an army, let's say one of Napoleon's field marshals during the Napoleonic Revolution, what are you doing, right? You're just doing what Napoleon says.
Win at all costs.
You're just win at all costs, right?
And if that means you spend 30,000 lives, you spend 30,000 lives.
Exactly. And to be honest, that he is good at spending 30,000. He is good at just achieving an objective without any care for people involved. Like, think of the number. The real reason that Jason Kenney is where he is today is the number of people he threw under the bus. If he had brought Vitor in to the center, if he hadn't kicked Derek Fildebrand out so he could start his own media empire, if he hadn't treated you the way he treated you, if he hadn't treated me the way he treated me, if he hadn't treated all these people so negatively, and brought them in and listened to them.
He didn't treat me anything. I just didn't exist.
True. Well, that is a way of treating someone.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was like, did he treat me now? I just didn't acknowledge my existence.
Well, that's the other funny thing about Jason Kenney is he doesn't like confrontation. Have you guys noticed this?
Yeah.
If he doesn't like you, he will not look you in the eyes. Mm-hmm. He won't even, he'll run away.
Well, people don't, you know, a lot of people don't know this, but I served with Jason Kenney for 10 years.
Yes.
And I saw him, you know, I was involved in the government, very, very much involved in some portfolios. And I was there every day. And during that period of time, 10 years, even though I saw him just about every day when, you know, we were in Parliament was sitting, I would say I probably spoke 30 words or less to him during
for
10 years. And, you know, I've made lifelong friendships there. And I actually contributed significantly, my CA did, to one particular program that he had. And, you know, that was probably the 30 words. So, wow. And, you know, that's unfortunate. And, you know, different people have different expectations. But, you know, I think leaders, Brian Mulroney always impressed me. You know, when he came up to Fort McMurray, he knew my mom's name. He knew my dad's name. He knew all the kids' name. And there was 11 kids in my family. So, you know, he'd come in and he'd sit down and he'd talk to you. And it might be that he just learned it 30 seconds before, but he knew your birthday. He would, you know, he was just that kind of person. And I think that kind of leadership inspires people to follow. You can't just tell people what they're going to do and expect them to do it. You have to bring them with you to make the decisions and then to go the next step and feel like a team. Like, you know, something happened to me this morning and I've got to say it. There was a miscommunication by my staff, which, by the way, is appointed by Jason Kenney, hired by Jason Kenney and instructed by Jason Kenney and his staff. And, you know, I was an hour late for a duty that I was supposed to be on, but I didn't know because my staff, his appointed staff, didn't put it in my calendar. And so I'm on, you know, I'm in a rush to get there because I want to be a team player. And I guess I get a $25 fine for being late because their staff screwed up. I mean, it's just like, why would you fine people on your team that are grown-ups? Like
$25.
Like, I feel like I'm back at A&W serving teen burgers, you know, and I'm 5 minutes late for my shift. Like, anyway,
yeah, that's not a way of treating a team, basically.
Adults. Yeah. You know, an adult team, a team that wants to be there and make a positive difference, and that people in Alberta sent here as their representative.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're
adults.
We know for a fact that the Minister of Energy found out about the purchase of Keystone Pipeline 30 minutes before the press conference. That isn't leadership.
And that minister has known Jason Kenney for at least 10 to 15 years before that decision made.
Yeah.
On a personal level.
And it didn't matter.
But it's that absence of delegating.
Yeah.
It's
micromanaging.
I would disagree. Okay. I have a much harsher characterization. I call it toddler managing. Mm-hmm. So sometimes the premier is a little bit like a toddler. I want what I want when I want it now. And then when you're still doing it and he doesn't care about it, he's like, what are you doing? I don't care about that anymore. Get rid of it. So there's both the drop everything and do what I want, followed by the, why are you still paying attention to that? It doesn't matter to me anymore. And it's part of the reason why this government never dots its I's and crosses its T's. So earlier we mentioned Aloha Gate.
No.
Aloha Gate need not have existed when in September of 2020, the government bragged about creating a new program out of the Calgary Airport, WestJet, to allow people to start going on vacation again. Yeah. So they literally could have said, okay, we're going to do this program. Let's brag about it. Then because we're doing this program, let's go change the rules and say that people are allowed to go on vacation because we bragged about it. And then having changed the rules and changing the website, then their own staff wouldn't be violating the rules. But nobody in this government ever pays attention to that second order effects of the decision that got made.
The disconnect. Yeah. Because you're absolutely right. I mean, I think a lot of the MLAs and ministers got caught in a situation that really the government was saying and the premier was saying through his office is, we're all better now. You know, WestJet, we've got the program, go, 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 spend money, get the economy back going. But he forgot to tell the rest of Alberta.
Yeah.
And so they're sitting there going like, what do you mean everybody's gone over to Hawaii and Mexico? Yeah. What do you mean? And I actually feel sorry for the MLAs because I think, you know, I don't think that they would have gone unless they had received the notification on high. And I truly believe that the premier's office and the whip and the house leader knew who was going and where, because that's the way it works in all the governments I've ever been involved with. So to say otherwise is not fair and not right. And I think anyways, but yes, very truly, I feel sorry for the MLAs because I think they were caught by an ineffective leadership, not by a mistaken decision.
Mm, fair.
But they burn either way.
I will say this though, like I've never been a leader. I was always the guy serving leaders, right? In Ottawa, you've had lots of staff. Being a staffer, the way I like to describe it, we're butlers. We're really high level butlers, right? We just make things happen. And that's, you know, we manage things.
Very smart butlers.
But you're not, very smart butlers, but you're not the leader. And more recently I became a leader of an organization and I very quickly almost became a tyrant because I was just driving to the goal and I wasn't caring about people's emotions. And it really caused a lot of pain in my organization, which has now been remedied. And I'm very happy that Zane Novak is the new executive director with tons of experience. And like, he's an old weathered, hardworking man who knows what he's doing. Right. He's been through the ringer time and time again. He's not going to be emotionally flustered by leadership. Right. But I was. And so I want to say this, I think it's important, is it's not easy, right? Jason, it's easier to go the route of Jason Kenney and just because it's annoying.
It is.
It is frankly annoying to listen to people's criticisms all the time and their constant critiques and their constant like, oh, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong. And and that is the thick skin, the rhinoceros skin that Dale Johnson told me about when I first met him, my first political meeting, when my mom asked him, what would you tell a young man who's interested in getting involved in politics? He said, you have to have the skin of a rhinoceros. And I don't yet. That's the honest truth. And I wish that I did, but I don't. And that's okay, because Jason Kenney doesn't either. He cannot handle criticism.
Well, you just need to be the youngest of 11 and get it your entire life. You know what? Lesson I learned early on, my parents were serial entrepreneurs and they started a lot of businesses in Fort McMurray. So when I was a young boy of 5 or 6 years old. Believe it or not, I had a paper route of 54. I remember an apartment building. My mom would watch me in the back alley go in the apartment and come back out again. And I was 5 or 6 years old and I'd deliver newspapers. And they had a couple of retail businesses and I was in there. And so at a very early age, I was doing work. All my family was there. It was that kind of work. But what I learned very early on was, even though I was the boss's son, and you know, after a while I knew more than all the employees, is that if I tried to boss people and tell them what to do, it didn't usually work well for a teenager telling an adult what to do. And so I would have to find other ways, because when I tried to boss them, they would quit. And then I would have to do the other job. And I found that after a while, as a teenager, when people would quit and I'd have to do the job, I didn't want to do that anymore. So I learned quickly that, you know, just keep your mouth shut. You know, basic management skills are to make sure everybody's part of the team, make sure that you find doers on that team, and then get things out of their way when they're trying to do things. So you remove the obstructions and take the entire team and the people you're serving with you, whether they be consumers or whatever it is, and you will have a successful business or organization. And you can't do it all yourself. So whenever you try to do it all yourself you dictate to people, you end up with a mess. And that's why you have to have a team.
Yeah. So I want to ask you a couple questions, because one of the themes of the Canadian story is about learning from mistakes, right? And learning from our past, and that you've never failed if you learn from something, right? So what have you learned in life, would you say, that has prepared you for this moment? I mean, I'm of the belief, and we'll talk about this, that there's going to be a leadership race coming up soon for the United Conservative Party. There are a lot of people watching this and in Alberta who think that Jason Kenney is just going to cheat and he's going to win. And the truth of the matter is, people like the three of us are working very hard to make that happen. And don't get it wrong, folks. Like, we were not on the same side in that leadership race. I was on Jason Kenney's team, and I rocked you guys in Central Alberta. I just did, right? Yeah, and that was because I was deceived by his rhetoric. I believed what he said. I bought in, even though I was warned about who he was by people I respect. And I thought I was better. I thought I was smarter. I was hubristic in my youth, right? So those are things that I've learned. I've learned you cannot trust what a person says. Mm-hmm. You can only trust what they do.
Yeah.
Right?
But after you've trusted them on what they do, then you learn you can trust what they say.
Ah, exactly.
So yes. That's what I surround myself with, is people that I can trust.
Yeah.
And that are part of the team. You know, what I've learned is the most important thing is people. That's what I've learned. Like, it doesn't matter whether it's a bureaucrat that's downtown Edmonton, or the farmer that's out in southern Alberta, or in fact, the oil worker that's, you know, in Fort McMurray. It's about people. And you're a servant of the people. And if you can't understand that, then you shouldn't be in politics. It's about people. And that's the most important thing, because everything else, and, you know, sure, sometimes you have to be tough. You know, different premiers are necessary at different times. You know, you enter into a government that has been, you know, focused or managed in one particular way, and you have to make sure it's focused in a way that people can afford it. But also, you know, I had my son die in the healthcare system here, and you know, our healthcare system is a mess. We're gonna have to fix it.
We have to fix it. Oh, I couldn't agree more.
And it took a long time for it to become this bad. It's going to take a long time to fix it.
This is what I say to what I've been saying in all these meetings. I say, I've got good news and I got bad news. The good news is, we're going to get rid of a corrupt premier. Bad news is, you have to be involved forever now.
Yeah.
So when Danielle Smith was on the show, I asked her about her worst moment, which was when she crossed the floor and basically lit her political career on fire. Your hardest moment, I would argue, and I'd like to hear it, was obviously the death of your son, and then having to go into a province-wide televised debate. And a lot of people saw that debate and made, I think, false assumptions about you. I'm included in that group of people. Can you please talk about what happened there? Because I think people need to know.
My son died a couple of weeks before.
Yeah.
It still chokes him up.
Oh, absolutely. How could it not?
But, you know, also, I was, you know, I had, just like everything, you know how leaders are treated. So you have people beside you that are telling you to act a certain way. And, you know, people were there calming me down, telling me don't, because, you know, like, as a litigator for 10 years, I can promise you, every person on the opposite file of me does not think that I'm weak.
No.
Nobody. You know, I've taken on some of the largest corporations in Alberta and Canada.
And won
litigation, including municipality and oil company. I don't back down from anybody. I'm going to fix healthcare.
Yes, you are. Absolutely. Regardless, we are going to fix healthcare in this province because one of the things that I've been saying to people, and this is absolutely important, is that...
No,
it's all good. No, thank you. Jason Kenney's not going to win, but we're all going to work together, right? We're not going to destroy each other.
Well, and that's really important.
Because he's going around telling everyone that if he's not the leader, we're going to rip each other to shreds. And the opposite is true. In fact, I know for a fact that Danielle and Brian have sat down and talked about what happens, right?
On more than one occasion.
Yep.
One of the things that happened last race.
Also, I just wanted to thank you for being so vulnerable with the listeners. And like,
it's not hard because I can't help it.
Well, it's not hard because he can't help it. But folks, this is a man who cares about healthcare. Regardless of what you may think about him, there's nobody in this province who has a bigger... There's a lot of people now. There's a ton of people.
Who are really worried about
it. Well, not just worried. People have died because of what has happened. I have five friends that have committed suicide in this province because they lost hope.
And I can tell you, if I can say this, my son was misdiagnosed. And then they reordered the test two times after that. $1,500 test. While he's sitting in the hospital costing... upwards of $10,000 a day. And the test was canceled twice. That would have saved his life. I hired a lawyer that cost me a lot of money, a very good litigation lawyer, medical malpractice lawyer in Edmonton, to find out. I wanted to find out what happened to my son because they wouldn't tell me. And he spent a lot of my money, flew all over North America, and he found out. And I had Vicky Kaminsky in my office and apologized to me for my son's death.
Doesn't change anything.
No, doesn't change
anything. And it doesn't fix the system because it's very likely that the person who made the mistake doesn't even know. And nothing got changed. And there are lots of things that are broken this way.
But justice, if I can say this, justice is the same thing. Like justice, I'm a lawyer by trade. I'm from Fort McMurray. People don't have access to justice. And even when they do, it's just so expensive. Nobody can.
It's become pay to play.
Yeah, exactly.
It's become pay to play justice.
And our education system. Don't start with that.
Yeah. but we don't want to get away from that. We'll have another interview where we talk about what we're going to do. Right now, we got to talk about what's happening.
And what's important is to make sure that people have a chance to vote.
Yes.
I'm voting no. Can I tell you why I'm voting no?
Yes.
Because if Jason Kenney wants to be in this leadership race, let him be in the leadership race. Let people have the opportunity to see him up on a stage if that's what he wants. But my goodness gracious, there is no way. There is no way the UCP is going to win the next election under Jason Kenney's leadership as it is today.
No.
So if there's a refresh and he comes back in and gives a new policy and says, I'm going to change, and then has 6 or 8 months to do so.
Okay. And maybe if he changes his leadership style and becomes consultative and brings everyone that he's been pushing away around him and says, okay, I'm willing to listen now. But we all know that's not going to happen.
It won't. And I mean, the number one reason I'm voting no is because Jason Kenney represents that Einstein's definition of insanity, which is that you do the same thing over and over and over again and you expect a different result. And I listened very carefully to his speech on Saturday on April 9th. And there was nothing about how he would do anything differently. I mean, there are ways you can write a speech where you'll talk about how you'll do things differently in the future without apologizing if you don't want to be one of those guys who apologizes. But what that speech was is, if I win, you get more of the same and a stick.
Well, not only that, I'm sorry you felt that I treated you poorly. Yeah. That's what he's saying. That's what abusers say.
Yeah.
They say, I'm sorry about your feelings.
Yeah. I didn't mean for you to feel it and live it that way, but you did. And you didn't care about anybody's feelings. And you haven't been introspective enough to change how you would approach the next decision. So all of this stuff is there. And ultimately, you know, for me, that's the part of it where I feel like he's broken trust. But I think for a lot of Albertans, they just don't trust him on any file. Members of our party don't trust him. I mean, we were talking earlier about the envelopes. We spend, I know you do, talking to people from Take Back Alberta. I do communicating with people on Brian's behalf. Spend big chunks of every day trying to tell people that things they think Jason Kenney is going to do, actually he can't do.
And so that's a perfect segue into what
we need. Or at least not to the number he needs to do to win.
Yes, exactly. Right. So I want us to walk. This is important. This is the most important part of today, is we're in a environment where trust has been broken between our institutions, whether it be healthcare, judicial, educational, but most of all, government, right? people, a lot of people, whether you do or not, a lot of people no longer trust our institutions. Okay. Now, for example, Deloitte is a member of the World Economic Forum. This is a huge problem for us because there are a lot of people, myself to a degree included, that believe the World Economic Forum's driving policy agenda is evil. And so they think, well, if this group is engaged with, or sorry, if Deloitte is engaged with the World Economic Forum, how can we trust the outcome of the vote? So what I want to do is walk everyone through the checks and balances that are in place to make this vote as fair as possible and why we don't, why we haven't gone and just started our own thing, right?
If I could just say the first thing, I can't imagine any corporation at that level that would allow any kind of cheating, whether it was beyond their control or not, and have their name attached to it. I can't imagine. I mean, I know I hear the conspiracy theories. I'm a doubter. I'm there. I'm questioning things because I think that's very important for people to do. But I just can't imagine because it would destroy Deloitte. It would destroy them. They'd be finished. And that's a multi-billion-dollar.
And they're an auditing firm. Yes. Like if they can't audit things anymore,
it's a global firm.
Yeah.
So even though I'm sure at the top levels, there's somebody who loves going to Davos and getting wined and dined by Carl mm-hmm. Schwab and the World Economic Forum.
Klaus.
Klaus, yes. Right, Klaus Schwab. Schwab.
You're not friends.
No, we're not friends.
I don't think he likes me.
I'm a bricklayer's son. You know, these fancy people, they got nothing on me. And I have they have no appeal to me at all. But I think, you know, the partners, the Deloitte partners in Canada, the Deloitte retired partners in Canada, they all know what happened to Arthur Andersen and how one bad political.
Did you share our we'll know what happened to Arthur.
Arthur Andersen used to be the seventh largest accounting firm in the world. And they got into bed with Enron and looked the other way on a few things because Enron was politically powerful in Texas. And they signed off on a couple of things the wrong way. And basically Enron wiped out Arthur Andersen. Like, because Enron was crooked, Arthur Andersen ceased to exist, and all of the Arthur Andersen partners had to go find jobs somewhere else. And all of the retired Arthur Andersen partners who were getting Arthur Andersen pensions don't anymore.
And this is an important point that I want to make very clear. If Deloitte allows cheating, we will catch it. We're going to catch it, and then we'll destroy Deloitte.
Yep.
If we have to,
it's that simple.
We will burn corruption to the ground. That's my commitment to everyone here. We're going to burn corruption to the ground.
And let me make it a further point, because Brian asked me to, and our team with Brian's name first on it, filed a detailed arbitration complaint with the party, complaining about the process, asking specific questions.
Hey, we're going to have to back up. What is an arbitration process?
Okay.
It's absolutely the first step you have to take. It's mandatory.
Yeah, you can't go to court.
Why?
Because the United Conservative Party is set up as a society under the Societies Act, and the Societies Act says that if the party has any sort of internal arbitration process, you must use that before you can go to court.
Which is why we haven't sued the party, because we had to go through arbitration. Because no judge would take it until we did the arbitration process, correct?
Yes, exactly.
I'm not a lawyer, but that's my understanding.
I wrote a 4,000-word arbitration proposal. And then we hired some very high-end lawyers to look over my work and to follow the case. I did a good job of it. I've been an executive director of a political party. I was the secretary of the Conservative Party of Canada. I've seen good arbitration proposals, dispute notices is what they're called, brought to me before. I know what a good one looks like. I know how to write one of these things. I knew how to put the pieces together. We handed it over to the party. The party looked up and said, uh-oh. So their lawyer, who was a friend of mine who I've known for many years, who, to the best of my knowledge, I've never caught lying to me, called me up and said, all right, there are things in here that are true, and there are things in here that are false. And we would like to simplify this arbitration as much as possible. We want, you know, you and Brian and the 9 other people who put their names on this to have some level of confidence in this. So one, even before we begin the arbitration process, come into my office. What do you want to see? We'll bring spreadsheets. We'll bring different things that you need to see. And we'll reassure you about what we've done and what we haven't done. It will tell you that there are things that are in your arbitration complaint that are not true. And then there are things that are true, but they're not true the way you think they are.
And this is the lawyer for the party, acting for the party, talking to you.
In the interest of the parties, ostensibly, at least that would be what he should be doing, not in the interest of Jason Kent.
In the interest of the executive committee of the party and the party members as well. And so literally, he brought me in, put a spreadsheet up on his big screen, handed me the mouse, and I got to sort it whichever ways I wanted. That spreadsheet tells me that there are 58,600 members who are eligible to vote. That number will actually go down a little bit because there's probably still about 200 duplicates there. So there's a small number of people across the province who've gotten two ballots. You can send them both back. Only the first one will count.
Yeah, they're not going to, Deloitte is going to just...
Yeah.
But say no on both of them.
Yeah.
Yes, because, yeah. Anyway, so...
Vote with your heart.
he walked me through the entire procedure. I got to sort the list. I got to sort the list by which day people bought their membership. So I could see the people who brought in at the last minute. I asked for and got to see the purchase method and the last four digits of the credit card. When you sort people by the last day, and then you sort by purchase method and by the last four digits of the credit card, then you can start scrolling down through it and you'll see that it's random, 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 random,
and then,
Oh, and then 1,973 on the same Amex, and then random, 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 and then 600 on the same Visa, and random, 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 and 400.
Why, you didn't buy for your closest 2,000 friends?
No, I did not spend $20,000 to buy my closest friend. The party tells me, and this is slightly true and not completely true, there's a little bit of spin to it, that yes, they were bought with what they call whitelisted credit cards, and that they say that this is a procedure that they use to simplify the entering of the data on it, because then whoever sold them keys the stuff in rather than the party having to hire somebody to key it in, because supposedly there are paper applications that match each of these transactions.
With dollar, $10 bills stapled to them.
And I'm sure the signature looks totally different.
Oh, yeah.
Ultimately, they told me that there were more than 4,500, which is actually the number I saw was roughly 4,200. They had told me it was about 4,500. It's possible that I missed the credit card that had 200.
Right.
And, you know, it's, I still got to scroll through a lot of pages to see 58,000 transactions. And actually, it wasn't 58,000 because there were really only about 15,000 transactions in the last 3 days.
Yeah.
Now here's the good news. Last 3 days, 15,000 transactions. 14,600 of them are random people buying with their own credit card. That makes me feel good. Those are normal everyday. There's nothing wrong with John Smith buying for himself and his wife with his own credit card. And there's two transactions with that credit card. Fully randomized. And then there's six credit cards that I saw that added up to about 4,000 and change. The party says that they were purchased with paper and that there were more than those and that they have rejected the ones where the paper wasn't signed. And that for these 4,500, the papers were signed and they're going for it. Now, honestly, the party has done this all the way back to 2017. And in 2017, Jason Kenney didn't turn in 4,500 paper memberships. He turned in roughly 17,000 paper memberships.
Now, some of those was different back then,
yes,
right?
At that time, that was fully legal.
And also 5 years ago, older people were not nearly as technologically savvy. People have developed, right? I handed in a bunch of paper memberships from local people.
With cash.
Yes.
And literally, I helped Brian in November. We went and visited people in Plamondon and Lac La Biche and sold 40 memberships that day with cash.
Yes.
So I came back with $400 and 40 sheets, and I entered them into what the party calls as a portal. They set up portals for nominations, and they track all of that, and you send the paperwork. 40 is different than 4,000 in 3 days.
And different than 17,000.
And different than 17,000 over a leadership base. Frankly, I'm a big believer in the federal system, which is the federal law now says no cash.
And I agree.
Your personal credit card, personal check.
It's just the best way to get rid of cheating.
It just solves the cheating.
But also, the federal party has done a rule change differently than they don't allow these white credit cards.
No, they don't, not at all.
They don't allow anything
special. Yeah, so just to make that clear on Brian's point, everyone, the Federal Conservative Party of Canada does not allow whitelisted credit cards, whereas the United Conservative Party of Alberta does. The reason the federal party got rid of whitelisted credit cards was to stop cheating.
That our party has always allowed this. Something for the next 7 leaders to change. But ultimately, what I know is that there's less than 4,500 that I could see on a list that I could verify, that I'd sorted by month, that I went and looked up to verify that my membership was proper and Brian's membership was proper. And I had a list of 30 other names that I quickly checked. Again, it shows me that they're not, they haven't gone to the trouble of creating a fake list for me, which frankly is a tremendous amount of work. Like, it's not easy to fake a 58,000 person list with randomness in it.
No.
It was a real list. I believe that. Was it a complete real list? There were things that they didn't show me. Yeah, they didn't show me the cancellation of the memberships that they said they'd canceled, but they did show me what the list is. And they have since provided us with a horrible
with a horrible, horrible paper copy with size, what, 6 type? And honestly, game respects game, and they followed the letter of the law, and
definitely
they made our lives miserable, but whatever.
So it just sorted it by first name with the rest being random data.
Yeah.
So literally, if you're a Michael, I've got to go through 9 pages of Michaels looking for you. And
to find your last name.
Yeah. Oh, and this is on a PDF because we're not on Excel here. Yeah. So yeah, there's no searching.
There's no searching. It's brutal. But they did do it. There's 58,600 roughly. There's 4,000 and change that are problematic, which means that there's 54,000 people who bought their own memberships.
Yes.
And then separate from that, of the 54,000 people, or the 58,000 people who have memberships, 36,000 and change are outside of Edmonton and Calgary. 16,600 of them are in Calgary. 7,000 or so are in Edmonton. And then even of that 36,000 that are outside of Edmonton and Calgary, about 40% of that list is central Alberta, sort of from Calgary north to Lacombe-Ponoka, plus Hardston-Sitsika, the deep south. So literally 35 to 40% of that list is from areas where Jason Kenney is decidedly unpopular.
Yeah, I want to speak to this and actually get your guys' opinion on this, because I want to talk about cancel culture a little bit, because Jason Kenney is using cancel culture to hurt the conservative movement in this province. And that's another reason that I think he needs to go, because he's using the left's talking points to defend himself, which is...
He's prepared to burn the party down.
It's not just even anti-party as an institution, it's anti-movement.
Movement, yeah.
He's hurting conservatism.
It's even worse. Everything he has said about conservatives lately, about the people he's mad at in conservatism, Rachel Notley will say in the next election, and quote,
and say Jason Kenney said it. Yeah, exactly.
So it's incredibly damaging.
Oh yeah, but on that, the first couple points I want to make. Let's talk about the 11 ridings. There are 11 ridings in this province that represent 25% of the total membership, and those are, in order, I believe, Cardston-Sitsika, which is Jody Gateman's riding. Why are there so many members there? Well, because a wonderful, well-respected farming family, I think it's fourth generation Albertan, who Jason Kenney asked to be on the UCP provincial board, and she was elected in a landslide to get there, and then resigned because she didn't like what Jason Kenney was doing. Now her views are so extremist and unacceptable that she can't even be allowed to run. And she was on the board, asked by Jason Kenney to be on that board.
And she's currently sitting as a county councillor, having been massively reelected just last
year. And truly involved in conservative politics, both the federal and provincial level, for years.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, she was involved in Preston Manning's campaigns back in the day.
All the way back to Grant Hill. She was Grant Hill's, as a young woman, she was Grant Hill's riding president. Oh, like way, way.
She loves this, right? So that's number one. That is the number one riding. Number two is one of my home turfs, Rimby Rocky Mountain House Sundry. It has the second most number of members. And the reason for that is a wonderful man, basically a paragon of virtue, named Tim Hoven, 8 children. So not quite as many as your parents, but close, right? 8 children. The 9th child that they had, doctors told them that this child was going to die after being born. They brought that child to the world and loved it till it died. This is the kind of people they are. Solid. Just solid, solid people. Jason Kenney is running around in the press calling this man a white supremacist. A white supremacist. And the people of his riding, his neighbors and friends, weren't having any of it. In fact, they weren't having any of it so much that they were going to vote out Jason Kenney's lieutenant, Jason Nixon, and they had to disqualify Tim Hovind on trumped up charges of racism in order. They're using the left's talking points. So those are these are the two top ridings. Those two ridings represent nearly 10% of the total membership list.
And number three?
Sorry, and number three for McMurray.
Yeah,
my friends. Let's talk about that, because it's Fort McMurray-Lac-La-Vache.
Yes.
Which is the second smallest population of any riding in Alberta, and it has the third largest membership. Brian sold a lot in Fort McMurray. And then you can make your way all the way down the list to 63rd, and that's Premier Kenny's riding of Calgary-Lougheed, which has one of the largest populations in Alberta.
And I want to reiterate that for people. The riding with one of the largest populations in the province, the Premier's riding, is 63rd on the membership list. You have to go down 62 ridings to get to the number. That's how little the people in his own riding want him to remain Premier.
Jason Kenney will not win this leadership race because he was... Leadership review. Because he was unable to sell enough memberships in Calgary to people who should be supportive of him to save him.
Yes.
Ultimately, that's what it's going to come down to. In South Calgary, in the three or four ridings that overlap with what his federal riding was that he served for 20 years, there should be 10, 15, 20,000 members.
For sure.
There are not.
Are there even five?
No. Maybe five. Probably not.
If I could just say here, when I ran just recently, I ran on a mandate that if I was elected, I would do everything I could to remove Jason Kenney as our premier and the leader of our party. And I mean, we had 3.5 weeks, I think, to sell memberships, and we sold a ton. I think there was somewhere in the neighborhood of 300 or 400 when we got there, and 1500 or so when we left. But by accident, even in the neighboring riding of North, they almost tripled the number of memberships they had by accident, because they wanted to be part of that mandate to remove Jason
Kenney. And didn't realize where the boundary was.
Yeah, they didn't realize. Exactly. And I had a woman that I remember, I was there for the vote, and I had a woman come to me and say, Brian, they're not letting me vote. And she was very upset. And I talked to some people at the party, and they said, please send out a note to let people know. And, you know, I'd already done that. But people so much want to be part of it that they buy memberships for accident, want to get involved, and are upset when they can't be. Because in the oil and gas world, we recognize that Jason Kenney says one thing, does another thing, and really the overall picture of what he does and doesn't do is not helping our agenda.
Yeah, it's not helping our province get to where it needs to get, which is at very least more autonomous.
And if people had the chance across this province to buy a membership to oust Jason Kenney, right now I believe our membership list would be double, triple, quadruple what it is today.
Well, and I want to make this point very clear. The rules were set up so that people didn't buy a membership because they thought they had to be in Red Deer and spend $100 to buy a ticket. That's why the membership is only 58,600, maybe 58,400. We're not sure the exact number, but it's in that 58,000 range. As Brian just said, the party's membership would probably be closer to 300,000 if they had known that it was going to be a mail-in ballot and that they would have time to fill out the ballot and get it back. However, Jason Kenney didn't, and the rules of the bylaws of the party say that you only have to have a membership 21 days before a vote. He's violating the bylaws of his own party that he helped establish with you and some of our friends. And it's ridiculous. It's so blatantly cheating that I got really excited when it happened, because I'm like, well, he's admitted defeat. This is literally admitting defeat. And now we have a lot of people who are so worried that he's going to cheat beyond the pale that it's not even worth voting. So I want to go into why he wants people to think that.
I think he wants to frighten people, to demoralize them, to like, and frankly, you know, chunks of his cabinet, chunks of his caucus believe, well, he'll just find a way to cheat.
Oh, I've heard it in the last few days. I've heard from MLAs sitting beside me saying, oh, I can't believe he's going to win, but he's going to win because he's going to cheat. I'm like, this is an elected MLA, a professional, an adult. And he's telling me that he expects his leader to cheat. Like, how can
he expects his leader to cheat and he won't get rid of him?
Yeah.
That's the absurd part.
But here's the good news. There wasn't enough cheating up front. There aren't enough opportunities to cheat in the middle. And there will be enough people present at the count that he can't make it work.
Do you want to share about how you're going to be there?
I've signed up for a shift every single day of the verification. And if folks, we're going to post this on Brian Jean's Facebook page a link to a page to volunteer. So if you're in the Edmonton area, you want to volunteer to do 4 hours of hard work verifying. So if you think about the package you're putting together, if you're voting on it, it's the outside envelope. It's got a declaration. It's got a photocopy of your ID. Then it's got the inside envelope that's got your ballot. The way it works is a human being opens the outside envelope, scans the barcode beside your declaration. That pops up your membership. Then they look at your picture ID and the address on your picture ID or on the multiple pieces of ID that you've got there and verify that you're the person on the screen. Then they click, this person has voted, and they take the envelope, still sealed, and put it in the ballot box.
And this is important because I've had questions about why is the ballot separate from your ID? In our democratic system, it is very important to have a secret ballot. I'm going to tell you why it's so important to have a secret ballot. Because when caucus got together and said that they wanted to get rid of Jason Kenney in May of last year, of 2021, Jason Nixon got up on the stage and he said, there is no legal requirement for this to be a secret vote. So if you want the premier to resign, you have to stand up, look him in the eyes, and tell him you want to resign. And that's scary for people because Jason Kenney is the kind of person who gets revenge on people. In fact, he loves getting revenge on people. It's kind of one of his main motivators. So we have to have a secret ballot so that people don't know who voted how on this leadership
review. And when they verify the ballot, they have no idea what's in the secret envelope. And then they're going to throw the secret envelope into the ballot box with 40, 50, 58,000 other secret envelopes. And those envelopes only get open on the night of May 18th after they've been very well mixed. Nobody knows whose ballot belongs to anybody. As a matter of fact, if you put your name on your ballot, if you put a piece of your ID inside that secret ballot envelope, your ballot doesn't count because it's not a secret ballot.
Yeah.
So there's a bunch of rules attached to this. But I honestly believe that given where the voters are, where they live, given the fact that the number in South Calgary is small, given the fact that the number bought with those six credit cards is only 4,500, given the fact that those were bought in only four or five key ridings, and that these are not high turnout communities, you put all of those things together, I truly believe that Jason Kenney is going to get 43 to 46%. And Dave knows when we spent lots of time talking about Brian Jean's nomination victory in Fort McMurray, I was off by about 30 votes out of 800.
Yeah. 30 votes.
Yeah. Yeah. He was pretty close. I've rarely seen someone call it that close.
And you sit there and you think about stuff and you figure out the ratios and you think about where, you know, listen, it's not, there are people who are still prepared to vote for Jason Kenney. I think he's going to get 42 to 43.
I'm more in the, I think he's going to get the 35 to 38.
But I mean, I think that that's the first cup of coffee I've ever bought for you.
Yeah.
Can I have 30 seconds for a paid advertisement?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Commercial break, folks. I just want to confirm a couple of things. First of all, if there is a leadership race, I'm going to restore the grassroots guarantee. You should know, first of all, that grassroots guarantee came from the Wild Rose part of the equation of the amalgamation and the merger. And that was run and operated by me and our team, and we had a good team. So I want to let you know, first of all, that's going to be restored. The second thing that's going to happen is we're going to bring in an accountability act. We're going to make sure that leadership races are legal and the people that govern and make sure those rules are abided by are the government of Alberta, not the premier of Alberta. So we're going to make sure that we have laws in place for leadership races and for nominations, folks, because people should not be distracted by what's going on by politics, believing that that would actually happen to them. We need to restore trust in government, and we have to do that at the very highest level. So I commit to doing that immediately.
And one more thing that I'm going to push whoever becomes the next leader of the UCP to do, as I promised all of the members of Take Back Alberta, is never having an electronic vote in this province at any level again.
It has to be paper ballot.
It has to be paper ballot. And the reason for that is very simple. It doesn't matter whether there's cheating or not. We've lost faith in the process, and we need to restore the sacred act of democracy in this province.
And what about destruction of ballots? Should we do it 15 minutes after the code?
No, I think we should probably wait months, perhaps.
I think that would be a good idea. Yeah, if it's a solid win, there should be a solid count.
Exactly. Yeah. And there should always be able to be a recount. In the municipal election in Calgary, it's impossible to do a recount.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
absurd.
And it just breaks people's faith in things.
Hey, that's what I'm saying. It doesn't matter if there's cheating or not. I happen to believe there is cheating. Others believe there isn't cheating. The point is That doesn't matter, because if our people don't have faith in our democracy and they don't have faith in our institutions, and that's how you get a dictatorship eventually.
And they won't participate.
And they won't participate.
Yeah. Yeah. And we need people to participate. And right now you should participate by voting no on the ballot coming to your house right now.
But for those people who are worried, I want to talk about this maybe for 5 minutes, and then we should probably not take any more of people's time. But I think people care about this, and I think they want to hear this. If by some miraculous act of deception, Jason Kenney manages to cheat his way to victory, because I do not believe that he can legitimately win this vote, then we will not stop. This is not the end. We are going to hold this man to account until he resigns. And that's what he needs to understand. There is no way out, sir. There is no path to you becoming a popular premier, because you have broken the trust of Albertans. You've broken the trust of the left. You've broken the trust of the right. You've broken the trust of your caucus. You've broken the trust of the organizers and the people who put you there. So if you think that you can cheat your way to a tiny little victory, we will not rest until democracy is restored in this province.
We can't.
No, we can't.
We can't. We really can't.
And ultimately, I don't believe he's going to get 50% plus one. Two, 50% plus one isn't a survival.
Not when you're a dictator.
No.
Exactly.
We give leaders of political parties too much power.
Absolutely.
They get the power to, hire everybody who works at the party, hire all the contractors at the party. In this premier, he hires everybody who works for every minister. He hires everyone who works for the legislative staff and for the legislature. You don't get to be the boss of everyone with 51, 52,
no.
62, 66%. You need a number into the 70s.
But people are Kenny's trolls, as I like to call them, are making the claim that if we move the bar to 75, it means we think we're losing. We don't think we're losing, folks. We're just saying.
He's getting 43.
I'm 38. That's why. Mark my words, folks, 38. Anyway, the point is, if by some hook or crook he manages to do this, we will continue to hold him accountable.
Ultimately, I think the caucus will hold him accountable. There are cabinet ministers who didn't sell very many memberships in their own ridings, and I think they're going to look at the premier and say, sir, I've always been with you, but that ain't a good enough number to stay.
Well, I want to reiterate, these are the members of his own party. So if he's at 51% in his own party, that is all. That is the only evidence you need that he will not win the general election in May of 2023, or it might not be May. That's a different story. But the most important thing, the absolute most important thing, is you need to not be afraid.
Oh.
You need to not be afraid that cheating is going to happen and that it doesn't matter, because that's what he wants. He's trying to depress the vote. Stop him. And then my final message for Jason Kenney, and then maybe each of us will give it. I want to say, sir, you have done good in the conservative movement.
Yes.
You have been a champion of the values that I hold dear. And I want to thank you for that, because it's not right for us to just take these mistakes that you've made now and tarnish your entire legacy. It's okay. You can lay down your sword and go and do something else, and we will continue the fight for conservatism. You are not the only person who can do this, and you need to stop believing that. Sir, the best thing you can do for this party, for this country, for this province, is to resign before this vote, because you are going to be humiliated, and you do not want to be humiliated.
My two things. First, Kenny Rogers said it best. You have to know when to hold him and when to fold him. And I think it is time for Jason Kenney to go. I think for the conservative movement, for himself, and for all of us. And I want to be clear, too, that, David, as I've mentioned to you and Vitor, this is not about me. This is not about me and Jason Kenney. That's ridiculous. This is about renewing the UCP so we can be competitive against the NDP in the next election.
Exactly.
We don't want the NDP.
Like, we don't want the NDP. That's what it is. Yeah.
But if we don't renew the party itself and the movement of government, the NDP are going to do it, and we're going to be sunk. So, Jason, you have to leave. You have to go to the party. And you're not doing it for me, folks. You're doing it for the opportunity of somebody different that can win.
And Brian will make his case.
I will.
Right. And Danielle will make her case. She will. There's going to be a lot of people. There's going to be 10 people probably that are going to make their case. I would think. Would you agree with me?
I was thinking 9.
So, yeah. So there's going to be a lot of people making their case, and you, the people, I'm going to have all of them on here, and we're going to interview everybody. And Brian will be back on again to talk about his vision instead of Jason Kenney, which is what we need to do. But the point is, and I've talked to almost all 10 of them about this, and I'm going to sit in a room with all of them, and I know that they're all going to, they're good people, and we're all going to sit around and we're going to say, you are not going to rip your opponent apart. We're done with that.
Well, you should know Danielle and I have already
had that discussion.
We already have that discussion.
Yeah, Brian and Danielle have literally sat down and said, and Danielle, I have a lot of respect for her, and she's literally said to me, if Brian wins, I will serve in his cabinet.
Right? She's told me the same thing, and I think we'd work well together.
I do think you'd work well together, and hopefully if she wins, you would serve in her cabinet as hopefully health minister to take care of this problem. I'm saying whoever wins,
yes,
right? We need to work together.
It's got
to
be a team.
And people need to believe that, because right now, Jason Kenney's biggest talking point is, without me, there will be chaos. And my answer to that is, with you, there is chaos. Without you, there will be order.
There's opportunity.
Yes.
And in all honesty, there's so many good people that if they get together in a room, we can stop functioning. Like right now, our government is operating with one hand tied behind its back, because so many talented people will either are not invited or will not go. And the truth of the matter is that we can put together a really good team.
Yes.
We can have cabinet government. You know, like it doesn't have to, every decision does not have to be made either by the premier or the premier's people in short pants. It doesn't work well when you do that.
Just the last couple of days, I've known Todd Lowe and Dave Hansen, high quality, smart people. But just over the last few days, I've met some other very, very smart people in our caucus. And I've been shocked at, you know, some of the things that have been said recently in question period and in member statements. And I thought, wow, these people are really sharp, smart people as I talk to them. And I think
and a lot of them are just new to this whole politics thing. And so they're being manipulated by someone who's not new, who is a master of his craft. Let's not kid ourselves, folks. This is all Jason Kenney's ever done, and he's really good at it.
Yeah, he is good at it.
Yeah.
But, you know, the truth shall prevail.
Yes.
And what we need is not, there's a need for a different type of premier at different places in our history. And right now, Jason Kenney is not the one. We need a person that builds a team, that empowers people around them, and that takes the province of Alberta and the people of Alberta in a one direction, the direction of making things better and trusting your government again. I think that's huge.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing is trust needs to be restored.
Yeah.
So thank you, everyone. We went, I don't even know how long we went. It was awesome. If you have any questions for Brian, do you want to say where he can be reached, Vitor?
It's very easy to find Brian. Brian is brian@briangene.ca. And, you know, answers half a dozen to a dozen a day, depending on how busy we are with other things. But it's if it's technical stuff, he gets farmed off to us.
And if I can say, if you're interested in anything I've written, brian@briangene.ca. Is how you get me, but if you go on to the website
briangene.ca,
you will find 25 different articles that have been written about everything from COVID to whether we should have more autonomy in Alberta, many different articles and discussions about things you'd be interested in. So please take a chance to look at that before you send me a question, because I do get thousands of people every week reach out to me, and I get back to everybody. That's been my policy since I've been in politics, and I try to get back by phone or email or whatever I can. So. Mm-hmm.
Good. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Canadian Story. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at The CAD Story. That's The CAD Story. If you enjoy this podcast, please share it with your friends and family. Let's work together to remind Canadians how great their country is.